We have two lessons today. The first one is from the prophet Isaiah, chapter 41. Isaiah is a prophet of promise, and Isaiah talks about the promises of God for our future. And in this lesson, Isaiah says, as God is speaking, I will plant in the desert cedar, acacia, myrtle, and olive trees. I will put in the wilderness cypress, elm, and pine as well, so that they will see and know and observe and comprehend that the Lord's hand has done this, and the Holy One of Israel has created it. And also a reading from Psalm 107. The Lord can turn deserts into lakes and scorched land into flowing streams. If you are hungry, you can settle there and build a town. You can plant fields and vineyards that produce a good harvest. May God add blessing to the reading of the word. The Bible is filled with references to deserts and to mountains. The ancient Hebrew people were desert people. They survived harsh climates. They fought wars in the desert. They experienced famines in the desert. They knew, like we, the desert. Moses escaped Pharaoh's wrath into the desert and came back to lead his people, the Israelites, through the same desert to the promised land. Jesus went to the desert to confront the temptations that stood between him and his service to God. The Bible is also filled with references to mountains. In the Old Testament, mountains were places of refuge and protection. You remember David, when he was trying to get away from Saul, who was trying to kill him, went to the mountains and hid in a cave. Moses, we know, his first encounter with God was on a mountain, God's holy mountain that was called Sinai or Horeb. Mount Zion is referred to as Jerusalem, or the fortress of God. And we know of Jesus' famous sermon we find in the Gospel of Matthew, tradition says was delivered on the mount. We call that the Sermon on the Mount. And we know that Jesus went to the mountains to be transfigured with Elijah and Moses. We hear the Mount of Olives, where Jesus spent his last night of freedom. So deserts and mountains they're part of our spiritual heritage, and they're not just these geological formations that we have on this earth. But they're places where we can encounter God too. Isaiah 40 says, a voice cries in the desert, make straight a road for the Lord our God. Fill the valleys, flatten every hill and mountain, level the rough and rugged ground. Then the glory of the Lord will appear for all to see. The Lord has promised that. In Psalm 121, I think you know this one too, I will lift up my eyes to the hills. Where will I find help? It will come from the Lord who created the heavens and the earth. So deserts and mountains continue to spiritually enthrall us with their stark landscapes and their mysterious sounds and their silence. You might have noticed the first screen that we had up today was the sermon title of Death Valley and Whitney. I did a lot of hiking when I was a kid in the mountains north of Los Angeles. I hiked in the up the east side of the Sierras, and I did day trips and overnights and sometimes 3 or 4 day trips. In one of these trips, I had a pickup when I was a kid because I worked for my dad, and so I got to have a pickup. And I would never do this today, but about 6 of us piled in, 2 in the front and 4 in the back, into my pickup, and we went down. It was probably around Christmas vacation because it was cool, and we went to Death Valley. Any of you ever been to Death Valley? Death Valley is the desert of deserts. If you want to be a desert person, you have to go to Death Valley. Well, we were in Death Valley, which, as we know, is about at the lowest point, 81 feet below sea level. And if you stand in Death Valley, you can see Mount Whitney. the highest point in the continental U.S., which is 15,500 feet. And I'll never forget recognizing that from the lowest point to the highest point. It was a spiritual experience. So like Moses, we know the desert, and we know mountaintops. We know the mountaintop experience, which I experienced, and I imagine many of you have if you've hiked, what it's like to be way up high where the air is thin and you can see forever. Moses ran from this wrath of Pharaoh to the desert, and then he met God where? On a mountain. Jesus was tested, and then he discovered his calling out there in the desert. And he later spoke God's truth from this mountain, that in this sermon we call the Sermon on the Mount. We know the desolation of the deserts in our lives, the feelings of loneliness and loss, of isolation, of having a dry spirit. Yet in the desert we experience the vastness of God and discover that God's presence is everywhere. We too know of the mountaintop elation, that sense of elation when we reach the top of something and we're breathing the thin air of God's spirit, and we realize that God is up there too on the mountaintop. We give thanks to God for those places in this season of creation that we are in now. We give thanks to God for those places because those are some of the places that renew our soul. Places that we can get away from the noise, the confusion, and the demands of this life. With our advances in technology, we have amazing tools of communication. We have email, and we have texting, and we have Facebook, and we have Twitter. By the way, is a tweet is what you do on Twitter, is that right? Okay, so there's not tweeters and Twitters. There are people who tweet on Twitter, okay. I want to make that clear. For myself, all these ways of communicating with each other. Our ways of doing business have changed with all this technology too, we have to be instantly reachable. What do you mean you left your cell phone at home? How can I, you know? We have to be available instantly. We have to be reachable no matter where we are, what we're doing, or even what time it is. I was on the loop the other day, heading south on 101, and there was this pickup truck over in the left-hand lane, and he was just weaving between this lane and that lane. He couldn't decide. You know, you go halfway. I mean, it was dangerous. So he's moving between lanes, and for my first thought, he was drunk. The second, finally, I got up next to him, and he's, here he is with the wheel, and he's texting up on the wheel. Okay, an example of how technology has taken us over. We can't just drive anymore. We have to text and drive at the same time. Remember when you could go out on a golf course? I've golfed, actually. About the eighth hole or seventh or eighth hole, and you're way out there, you know, and it's quiet and cool. Well, now you got to have your cell phone out there too, which kind of takes away from that, being out there in the middle of this nice green place. When I was in Fort Dodge, I did a project with our youth called a 36-hour famine. Have you ever done anything like that? It's a fast for Marshall has. So we started at noon on Friday, and it ended at supper time on Saturday. Well, I had these six youth in during this famine. Well, one of the girls just could not stand the thought of not having her cell phone during the famine. So we weren't just doing a famine of food. We were also doing a famine of technology. Well, she just nagged that whole 36 hours for her phone. And driving the rest of us crazy, but she never got her phone, by the way. So when we broke the fast, after that 36 hours, we laid a plate of food down, and we laid her phone next to it. What do you think she grabbed first? It wasn't the food. Then on the 4th of July, I was up at Munns Park with our daughter and son-in-law. And under the tall pines, we took this dirt road way back, away from town. And it was so quiet and so peaceful, but every 4 seconds, a four-wheeler came driving by, disturbing all of that peaceful silence. So Facebook and other media has meant also that privacy is all but lost. Many of us, unfortunately, maybe younger people, feel it more, that so what? We don't need privacy, and there's no reason for it. Frankly, I'd like to know when someone's going to publish my picture on Facebook before they do it. And we have a cousin in our extended family who just posts pictures right and left, and I discover him on Facebook. And, hey, that's me. Do you remember the commercial on, how many of you all know what Calgon is, don't you? You know, the bath stuff you put in there. Well, there was a commercial years ago that had a housewife, and she was reclined in this bubble bath, and the bubbles are all over, and she says, "Calgon, take me away." C.K. remembers it. All of the great sages knew that we need to get away. We need to get away to the desert. We need to get away to the mountains or the seashore or the forest. Places that are untouched by all of that noise and in our time, all of that technology, that stuff that stresses our bodies, clouds our thinking, and disturbs our spirits. They understood that, these sages, that we can't listen to or hear God's voice unless all those other voices are silenced. My prayer for us today is that we each can find such a place or places to which we can retreat, to the mountains, to the desert, to the ocean, to the forest, without the four-wheelers for me. I also, and maybe you do too, can escape and retreat into music. I can do that. So we find these places so that we can draw into a closer understanding and experience of God's love and presence through prayer and through silence. Those places are getting harder to find. So maybe our retreat is our living room without the phone, without the computer or any other technology or distractions that constantly disturb our peace. I like the early morning myself. May we find that time also as we worship, to hear the voice and experience the presence of God in our music, in our prayers, and in one another. For God is still speaking to us. Let us then find the time and place to listen. Amen.